Hello, folks. I'm here to tell you about Space Rehearsal and Recording, a uniquely Austin experience preserving its musical heritage and inspiring future artists. Space is an affordable venue for rehearsal and recording, situated just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. With 31 spacious rooms, widely lit corridors, and excellent parking, they have the space to help you with your creative endeavors. Join their customers that range from local and international musicians, acting troupes, yoga practitioners, performance artists, and, of course, me. I rehearse down there. I'm down there a lot, at least once a week. Skyrocket has a room down there. We also all do kind of our own rehearsing in there, so I'm sure our room is pretty well used. The place is great. They have windows in the rooms, which is a very unique thing. I know I talk about that all the time. But listen, man, a window in your room and great soundproofing is very rare in a rehearsal space. Now, summer's coming. It's going to be hot. You're rehearsing in your garage. You're rehearsing in your house. Get out where the pros rehearse, okay? Get in the AC. You can rehearse like by the hour. You can rent a room. You can do a lockout, which is what we have in Skyrocket. But listen, if you tell them that you heard about them on How Did I Get Here, they will give you one free hour for your rehearsal. So please do that. It helps us. It helps our thing going on. So I was just there the other day talking to one of the owners, Will. We had a long talk out on their beautiful porch. And, man, they have a nice porch. You can take a little break, sit out in the sun. It's a gorgeous day today. The sun is shining. If you have a room with a window, you would be very happy. So, if you are in Austin and you want to do some creative stuff and you need a place to do it, go to Space. Space Rehearsal and Recording. Call them 512-448-9518 or spaceatx.com. Don't forget, tell them you heard about it on How Did I Get Here and get a free hour. Space Rehearsal and Recording. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, Tommy Howdy.
All right. Hello. I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. Thank you for listening to the show. I have a great show for you today. I have another South by Southwest doubleheader. I have from San Francisco, incredible rock band called the Soft White 60s. They have an album out called Get Right. We got together at the Driscoll, sat down, had a conversation. It was great, great, great. Then also from Los Angeles, California, I have the Cold and Lovely. I have Megan Tui and Nicole Fiorentino. They have an EP out called Ellis Bell. Came out last September. They are also incredible. Kind of a dreamy shoegazer pop band. Love it. Both great conversations. Both a little noisy in a hotel, kind of like bar area. We had these conversations. And anyway, great time sitting down talking to them. I also got to go see the Cold and Lovely like the next day. I went and saw them. They were going to do an acoustic recording like on the lake. But then they sat on a hill and warmed up. And I got a little private concert from them. Isn't that cool? Yeah, so all right. You're going to hear from the Soft White 60s and the Cold and Lovely in another South by Southwest doubleheader show. But first, let me tell you what's going on with me. Last I left you, I was heading out of town on Friday for 3 days of shows. I did that. And I just got back yesterday from that. I went to Houston. Skyrocket played three different shows, three incredibly different shows. The first show Friday was like a fundraiser for a private school in a very wealthy area. It was a giant like ballroom sit down dinner thing with like a giant stage with like giant Jumbotron screens playing, one behind us that actually showed like scenes from Africa on it, and also two on the side that show different stuff, like animals in Africa, like zebras and hippopotamuses. It was just weird. There was a weird thing that happened before we started, and those kind of things, sometimes there's a podium. In this one, for instance, there was speeches given by people, so there was a podium, and then there was an auction with an actual auctioneer. I can't do it. I don't know how these people talk so fast. I can't even rap. So anyway, we got on stage to play our first set, which was kind of like a mellower set before the big dance set at the end. So we get on stage to get on this, to do this thing, and the podium's kind of still up there. There's flowers all around it and these kind of presents. It's a giant obstruction in the middle of the stage, basically, is what I'm trying to tell you. Then this guy that was kind of running this show there really insulted our band and said we were, actually said that we were like wallpaper. And he was just mean. He didn't want to move it. And in our contract, the stage has to be clear. So, you know, we just were like, hey, let's get this down. But there was a moment of tension before the show that was a little intense. But that's all right, because you know what happened? We came out. We kicked that place's ass. We made those people have a great time. And that was Friday night. Saturday, I got up. I went and saw my grandparents and my family. My aunts were there. My uncle, Chuck. And my cousin Amy, my cousin Jennifer, the baby Elena, my little baby cousin. So we all had a great time hanging out. My grandparents are definitely getting old. There's some serious, you know, we have to start getting ready for taking care of them a little more and stuff like that as a family. I feel a little bit removed from that just geographically, you know, and I'm in a different city. I can get down there from time to time, and I am just a couple hours away, which is good. But it is a little strange, a little odd. People are rapidly becoming elderly. Like, it's happening faster. Like, you can see it from time to time. So, anyway, not to get too heavy, but I did have a great time hanging out with them. We did have a lovely, lovely time. Then Skyrocket played. Before that, though, I went to my friend Monica Pope has a restaurant in Houston called Sparrow. If you're there, I suggest you go to it. Anyway, she was kind enough to invite Skyrocket there for dinner, even though she was not in town. So I went down there with Trish and Darren and Catherine, our sound lady, and Jake, our dude that works with the band, Paul English, fantastic guy, Corey Glazer, of course, from Sheboygan, and the guy that wrote our theme song. We had a delicious dinner. I had a cocktail that was made of a cactus and a jalapeno infused vodka with soda and cilantro. It's kind of like a taco. And then I had the scallops and the fried Brussels sprouts. So listen, I suggest if you are in Houston, you live in Houston, you go to Houston, you're going to Houston, make reservations at Sparrow. This is a fantastic restaurant. Great, great, great menu. Farm to market sensibilities. You can go back. I can't remember what episode it was, but it was like last September, October. I talked to Monica Pope, the chef and owner of that restaurant. And since then, we've become friends. She comes and sees Skyrocket. We go there and eat. It's a great thing. All right. Thank you, Monica, for the great dinner. Then we played at the Continental Club Saturday night. It was sold out. Great show. Fantastic show. Got up Sunday. Hung out with a new friend of mine. Did some stuff, like ate a weird lunch at Bennigan's, which is, I know. I went to the Woodlands to play a gig. That night, we played a private gig for a bank in like a real small room. But man, it was really fun. People got crazy, danced. The lady fell down. Her shoes went flying off. And yeah, it was long shows, big shows, good time shows, three shows in a row. And I got up yesterday to come back. I got up early and I was like, oh, maybe I'll beat the traffic. And I took a freeway in Houston because I'd seen on the news right before I left, I checked out the traffic. I saw that one was kind of like closed down because of a wreck. So I went to another one and it was totally closed down because of a wreck when I got there. So it took me an hour and a half to go 3 miles down the 610 West. It was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. It took me 4.5 hours to get home from Houston yesterday. So anyway, got home completely exhausted, went to the grocery store, did some stuff, went and got my dogs. My Aunt Olga gave me I got it in the mail yesterday. She gave me a little blender. So I made a smoothie this morning with bananas and berries and apple juice. So that was good. Man, this is a long intro. I hope I didn't bore you to death with my life. But anyway, that was my weekend. That's what I did. Tonight, Skyrocket is playing another private show at the Rattle Inn. And listen, a quick plug. If you're still listening, I am playing on Thursday, April 10th, 8 o'clock, if you're in Austin, at the 1-to-1 Bar. Also on the bill is Yokemi, and also Ryan Holly, Paco Estrada, and tons of other people. Come on down, check it out. I'm playing a solo show, and enjoy some tunes, all right? Let's get into this South by Southwest doubleheader. by first talking to this great band from San Francisco called the Soft White 60s. They have an album out called Get Right. They gave me the vinyl of it. I spin it all the time. I'm a huge fan of the song Lemon Squeezer. They have a great video for it. Get out there, check it out, the Soft White 60s at thesoftwhite60s.com. After that, you'll hear from Los Angeles's The Cold and Lovely. All right, let's sit down and talk to the Soft White 60s. Let's get down. Soft White 60s. Let me get a quick sound check real fast. Octavio.
Yes.
Okay. And you're, wait, Joey.
Yes.
Ryan. Aaron. Okay.
Good.
You're going to have to speak up a little bit, if you don't mind, because this, while this is amplified, it amplifies also the conversation around us. Right. It'll sound real.
Yes.
So this is what, your fourth South by Southwest?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Fourth one. Third official, fourth.
And how long have you guys been a band? I don't think I even wrote that band.
4 years.
4 years?
4 years and change.
Sophomore.
Yeah? And you put out a full-length album and an EP?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The full-length just came out on March 4th.
All right.
And the EP we put out almost like a year and a half ago, almost two years ago. More than that, huh?
It was April 2011.
Yeah. So a little ways, yeah.
Oh, who did that video for Lemon Squeezer? That's a great video.
It was a director named Frank Dorr.
Yeah?
San Francisco. It's a friend and colleague of ours out there, and he had an idea, and we rolled with it.
It's a great idea, man. It's really brilliant.
Yeah, Beautiful Lemon, it doesn't really ever go wrong.
No.
Yeah, it came really well.
No, so, all right, so you've been a band for 4 years. You've come down here three times, and what are you looking for when you're coming here for this South by Southwest? What is it that you're hoping to gain? Promotion for your record that came out last week?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think the first time we came down, Ryan and Joey had been here before with other bands. Aaron and I hadn't really been here. So the first time we came down, I didn't really know what to expect at all. You know, I didn't know what the goal was. I just knew like, okay, we go down there and we'll be in a better place when we leave than when we came.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know how that was going to happen. And I think now it's kind of changed where, with our record coming out, there's more of a goal because we're here doing some day parties, some good companies. You know, I think the biggest thing is building relationships.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Absolutely.
Whether it's apps or, you know, merchandise companies or management or booking or other bands, you know, it's just about coming here and leaving and being able to keep in contact with people. Especially with our record, the relationships are huge.
That's a healthy way to look at it because I find that it's so overwhelming.
It's fucking crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like just walking down here,
and yeah.
like,
and it
I
just
mean,
started.
I don't want to sound like a jerk or anything, but I'd say like 13 out of 14 bands are terrible.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, but that's
a condition of Earth.
Yeah,
that is a human. Condition.
I guess when you bring them all together,
this is just a microcosm.
I think that's the other thing too. Is that if you come here thinking you're gonna have 5 great shows, you're gonna be really bummed.
Yeah.
Because you never know. A lot of times the shows are so quick and there's backlining going on. You're on and off. Sometimes the sound's not great, sometimes it isn't, but if you come here like trying to make friends and relationships, then you'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, but the shows, you never know what the hell's gonna
happen. Exactly. It's just hopefully for us it's an additional step to get to the point where we are guaranteed only awesome shows. Like I think last year the Yeah's played at Stubbs. They're not going to be playing any little weird barbecue joints on a Wednesday at noon, which is what we're going to still be doing those. So it's kind of like working our way up to the point where we can come to South by and know we're just going to have 2 or 3 awesome shows. But at this point, it's still a hustle to prove ourselves.
I find that there are certain parties that are always curated well. Like you know, if you go to a certain place, you're going to get some quality shit,
for sure, a
good headliner.
Yeah,
you know what
sure.
I mean? And not just the regular run of the mill shit. You, Octavio, have a great voice.
Thank you.
And I was telling these guys before, I downloaded this 5-song thing Yeah. The five songs. And the first song out of all of them, I think it's the first song, because I put them on my iPod.
The EP, right?
I was running. Yeah, yeah.
When this all started.
No. No. It was a sampler.
What is the first song?
City Lights, or I don't know.
Maybe, but there's a quality to your voice in that one song that reminds me of a cross between, and I mean this in the best way, Don Henley and Paul Rogers from Bad Company.
Right on. Yeah.
Who's the main songwriter? Is there a main songwriter? Is there a collective thing?
It's a collective thing for sure. I think it starts either with like a riff Aaron brings in, or Ryan writes a lot of shit just off the spur of the moment.
Yeah.
Like he'll come in the band and write something right away, and we're like, what is that? And then we'll start jamming that out, and we'll take that out of there, or like a drum beat then, or sometimes then I'll take it home and kind of work with the melodies and the lyrics and everything, then bring it back together, and we all touch it in our own way before it's done.
How is that process? Is that a peaceful process? Or
it
is that
good.
Good. Everyone knows.
We try out everything, you know, no matter if anyone has an idea, we're like, all right, let's try it.
And you go with the best thing, no matter whose it is. It's just the best.
You can't deny the best thing, usually.
I think part of the reason we feel like we have a good team going on, we have a good team rhythm, is because we kind of respect each other's taste and we all like each other's taste. And when Aaron comes in with something, it's not going to be bad. It's just going to be, you know, like, or, you know, Octavio comes in with a vocal line. It's something we can all appreciate. We have respect for each other's opinions.
Yeah.
And so the heat of the conversation doesn't come until where it's just about time to, like, put the song on the stage. And that's when I feel like the conversation might get a little heated, because we have to make the final choices, you know. But
it's probably just passionate because you love the music. I mean, it really comes through. Like your music is really fucking great.
Above all, we all respect each other's taste, and that's why.
I mean, we play in a band together and we tour together, but then we'll go on vacation together. You know, we make dinner together. Even, you know, it's like there's a level of like friendship that like makes the work.
You gotta have that brotherhood, man.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a little fight the world.
It's a little easier to get over arguments and little disagreements if you're actually friends, you know, as opposed to just being like, oh, I only see you when we play music.
Yeah.
Then that little shit can just blow up and it's just...
and it's not worth it. You're not part of my life.
Exactly.
Fuck you in a friendly way. And then,
hey, fuck you, man.
Fuck you, too.
And those kind of, like, shallow skirmishes can really bring down a whole project. They can bring a whole band to an end.
Oh yeah, I've been in bands where it's happened.
Exactly. Yeah. So because we're interested in longevity, we think it's really important to nurture our personal relationships with each other too, so that when our creative life can be safe and sound. Personal friendship is safe and sound.
Yeah, you got enough in the bank in your relationship where you can fuck around and still come back. So I noticed like a significant kind of step in production, between the older stuff and the newer record. Who produced this new record?
A guy named Jim Greer.
Who's that? Jim Greer.
Jim Greer. Yeah.
Oh wait, I wrote that down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who did he work with?
He worked with Foster the People. And,
right.
He was one of the producers on that record that he worked with. Yeah. We went to he's in the Bay Area as well, and we had met him and we started working together, and we wanted this record to have more tones and more production kind of than our other one we did
the EP.
Joe and
like
Ryan did, I think, the basically like all their takes for the EP like in
a day. Yeah.
Right. And then this one, it still only took, I think, two days. Yeah. 2 days. So even this record, we think this record took a long time for us, but it wasn't that long at all.
Right.
You know, we still did it quick.
What I noticed is it seemed like everything was, the way it was recorded, everything was so much more present. Like the guitars and the drums and your fucking voice, everything's like in your face. Yeah. And like, there's space, but it's like, it's very like right here, you know, it's awesome.
I think that might have something to do with the fact that the experience that Jim had with, which is pretty extensive, does lean toward a sort of a pop sensibility. He really likes the grooves to be good, but he because he comes from a background of pop and he's really interested and loves classic pop, that he wants the important parts of the song to be right where you can right where you can feel it.
Do you guys get a classic rock kind of thing?
Yeah,
on that? Are you sure with that?
I'm fine with it, because I mean, for me, vocally for me is
you have
my
a classic voice. You have a classic rock and roll voice.
That's what I think.
And that's not bad. That's
no, that's
amazing.
What for me. It's like I've always gravitated towards guys because I felt like those guys are singers.
Yeah.
You know that they are singers. They could be by themselves and sing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's gonna hold up fine. You know, but I think a lot of us, I mean, but all of us are all into like different styles of music. You know, but I think my vocals may lend a little towards more the classic thing because it's in the front. You know, the vocals are there.
Yeah.
You know, but I think a lot of instrumentally and sonically, especially on this new record, there's some newer things going on. You know, not so classic sounding. You know, like the Moog.
Even
the tones on it. And everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think generally we're not afraid to hear it. You know. Like references to our style being retro or anything like that, but we don't really talk in those terms when we're writing. We just kind of make stuff up, and it might be, you know, who knows what part of our mind it comes from, but we just come up with a little sketch, and then kind of goes from there. We don't really talk about where it's coming from.
Yeah, it's never been like a revival kind of thing where we feel like that's where all the good music was.
Right.
Like in our opinion, right. It's like there's classic records every decade.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm Cuban. Are you Mexican?
Yeah.
Yeah. We just had like the Latin man moment. These girls walk by like whatever the fuck. This podcast is over. Sorry.
It's all good.
Zoned out for a little bit.
There's classic shit every decade.
Do you guys? There's a band. There's a famous, well, not famous, but musicians that know them. They had a fan base of like psychotic fans. Their records are still re-released all the time. Called Jellyfish.
Oh yeah.
They were extremely retro. Yeah.
Stand up drummer.
Yeah. What's the scene like now in San Francisco? Because there used to be a very big like retro pop scene, like guitar.
There's still a lot of
harmonies.
There's a lot of scenes going on at once.
Yeah. So it's kind of it's hard to think about one scene, which I think is something that we've recently discussed, because San Francisco is such a fertile creative world that there's DJs, there's metal bands, there's pop bands, there's sort of what, you know, retro rock bands. You know, there's just a little bit of everything, and there's all kinds of cross pollination. I would say the scene is definitely fertile. There's a lot going on. Whatever you can come up with. There's a home for it somewhere.
Are there other bands that you guys find a kinship with, like ones you might want to name? Like, oh, we do a lot of shows with these guys. It works out.
Who have we done some shows with lately?
The bands that we kind of have kinship with, in the, they aren't really in music. Like, it's more like people that will like end up at the bar with more than like play shows with. I don't really know. We don't really have.
I think
like,
actually too.
Every time we played in SF,
we've played with different bands, different local bands every time. You know, we haven't really done any, like, our bills are always the same, you know,
right.
So it's been cool. We've been working with a lot of different bands.
We've kind of always had that since the beginning. We've never been like, we have to play with these kind of bands. We play like a show on a Friday with like a metal band, and then like Monday with a folk band or something. You know, it's like different.
Okay.
We've never been, we just want to get in front of different people.
Yeah.
You know, it's never been like,
and that, you know, that's cool that your kind of music seems like you could open for a harder rock band and still open for like almost like a, you know, poppy kind of band with
it'd
be seamless.
Totally.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a couple of things. I've just started looking at my notes finally. I didn't want to break eye contact. There's this weird thing. I don't know how to do it yet because I'm not an actual journalist. You're doing this, you're on tour, like you're here now. And you're going to be out basically until the 25th of April, according to your calendar.
Right.
Is you're coming back to Texas, I think, again in April, and you're going to Houston and some places.
Yeah.
Is that your normal schedule? Are you guys toured? Do you guys have jobs or anything? Are you out? Doing the thing?
We just started working with APA.
Okay.
And so they've just started this. Southpaw's kind of been our first run with them. Then we're going to be doing the next tour. We're coming back out kind of to get... We want to get more consistent and go into areas back,
right.
You know, to actually, that's the only way you kind of see.
That's the only way it's going to work.
Yeah, it really is. Like, if you spend it like every 4 months, 5 months, people forget about it.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of have to come back pretty often.
Yeah. I think it's definitely going to be a busy couple of months, and we're hoping that it just stays busy. I think we all kind of have other responsibilities besides the band. I actually just got fired from my job because of the intensity of the
tour. Unemployment.
So, but it's actually good.
You know what? Sucks for a little while, but then you get into it.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, underscores the commitment. You know.
Right.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi guys.
Hi, Maggie.
Hi,
hello.
Hi. Hey. Sorry to interrupt your interview.
Hello.
Joey's like, who's touching me?
Someone's touching me.
I had to leave my job in 1993, same thing. I got in a band, started touring a lot, and it was like, gotta leave, and I never went back.
Yeah. Right.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I hope to follow in your footsteps.
Yeah.
Ryan and I were in a band where we were touring very, very consistently throughout the year for many years. Excuse me. And this was a step back from that, where we started touring just a couple times a year, mostly writing, and now it's gotten to where we're going to start touring hopefully more half the year plus.
Yeah.
Where my job's also ending after this tour.
Right. What do you do? What's your...
I'm a sample coordinator for Gap Corporate.
Wow.
Which I've been doing
for... I don't even know what that is. That's how amazing that is. I fold clothes
behind the scenes.
Oh, okay. You didn't even have to say that. I would have thought that you were like...
Just leave it at that. Leave it at that.
Let's
edit that part out.
Yeah, exactly. Just stop there.
This Gap Corporate.
What job did you lose?
I was... the job I just lost was I worked for a hi-fi distributor. So
we sent
fancy turntables. Well, you can see these awesome turntables and all this great stereo gear, and then I just send it out to stores.
Yeah.
So it was just like I basically had my hands with expensive turntables and stereo gear.
I understand. Hey, did you guys put this album out on vinyl?
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
We do got it on vinyl.
Most definitely.
Our first vinyl.
Damn, you have it with you?
We'll have one coming. Awesome. Very.
Do you want one?
Yeah, I would love one.
All right.
A record player. I mean, I'm going to have to schlep it around all day, but I don't care. I'll get it
back. Yeah.
We'll get you one, though, if we don't.
Yes.
Okay. We'll be around.
So this is our first foray into Austin today.
So with your constant writing and constant touring, can you do both? Do you guys write on tour? Do you get time to fuck around and sound check with stuff? I guess.
I think that's going to be a whole new thing that we're working on right now. I mean, we write all the time. I mean, just with little ideas here and there, and then we'll see how it comes about. I mean, really, we've been able to go back from tours and write, you know, in our rehearsals, write. Then we leave for tour, then we come back and rehearse and write. Nice. I mean, as it gets busier, we'll see how it goes. I don't really know.
It seems like most of the writing that we do happens in the practice space, and we definitely have no problem coming up with new stuff. It just kind of pours out, actually. Mm-hmm. But then, also when we're on tour, Octavio's got his sketchbook out, his guitar is in there, Aaron brought a little electric guitar, so we're having a lot of time to kill inside the van. Hopefully we can use that time to write too.
And we tracked this record like almost a year ago, so like by now we already kind of have a little batch of songs. We're hoping maybe we can even get in the studio before the year's over again.
I bet that's tough right now, because you're excited that your album's coming out, you really gotta, especially these shows, I bet you're only playing songs from Get Right.
It's tough.
We are,
and then
we
got these other songs, you're like, oh, just wait to hear this new shit we have.
Exactly.
And we have a new one.
But we gotta remember, a lot of these songs, like, they're older us, but they're not.
No,
they're brand new to everyone else, so it's like we gotta constantly talk.
And there's people still finding out about the EP, too. You know,
like,
that was funny. That was actually what our producer, Jim, told us.
Yeah.
He's like, a lot of bands just stop playing the record, you know, because they're tired. But so he's like, just do not stop playing it.
Exactly.
You know?
It's definitely a common condition, you know. It's definitely a common condition to be like, oh, I want people to hear the new stuff because it's better.
Yeah,
you know, and who knows if you're right or not.
Being in a band and you hated your new shit, that would be depressing. I think that would be it.
Or you could apply the golden. I think Jim's point was, you need to apply the golden rule and put yourself in the position of somebody who's interested in a band or songs that you know and love. When you go see them, you want to hear those.
If there was a way to convey that message to every band. Like, you're not paying to get up and look at the fans.
Right.
They're paying you to be entertained, and they want to hear shit they want to hear.
Right.
I don't believe in being a, you know, kiss-ass artist or anything like that, but I definitely, fucking people paid for something. Give it to them. You know what I mean? And it's 3.5 minutes of your life, usually. Like, really?
Sure.
It's like Radiohead. Like, you can't play Creep, literally.
Yeah, exactly.
3 minutes.
Yeah, it's exactly. Would it kill you?
It's going to kill you? You never know. Mark. You don't. Hey, so let me ask you this. You guys have a manager, you have a publicist, you have, how involved in, like, because we live in a world now where, like, it was different for a guy like Don Henley and Paul Rogers. They didn't have to deal with Facebook, Instagram, tweeting, and constantly promoting their shit all the time. And like, hey, I just ate. Hey, I crossed the street.
Right.
Hey, look at him. He's waiting for a bus.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So, but you have to do it because it's expected by the people. That's what they want. So it's like, what are you going to do? They're paying you to do your thing. So tweet.
It's a good call, actually. I like that.
So
for later.
In that, like, how much of that do you guys end up doing? Do you divide that process up? I'm fascinated with this, and I think my listeners are too.
Yeah, with what, like,
just how do you handle? Yeah, just social media things that a band has to take care of themselves.
Aaron heads a lot of that.
Okay,
Aaron does a lot of that. He's on the media department.
Yeah,
he's definitely on the tip of like Instagram, Twitter, with emails and everything, because it definitely starts with him, because it's hard for us if anyone says anything in, you know, it can get complicated for who's going to respond.
Right.
Shuzito will come through, Aaron will respond to a lot of
that
stuff.
But like you're saying, now that we have, you know, management and publicity and stuff working with us, it's starting to divide up. Our tour manager, Andrew, just sat down. He does a lot of design work for us and handles a lot of, is helping with social media, and then our management has been helping a lot too, and kind of staying on the retweets, the favorites, you know, all that shit you got to do. But it is like an interesting, like, you know, thinking about like, you know, like Led Zeppelin touring in the van, and like Jimmy Page being like, "Fuck, like, what are we gonna tweet today, guys?" You know, it's like
that would be kind of funny.
Different aspect of
that,
like,
would be really
music
funny.
That's never been around before. Like,
yeah, see,
oh,
that's
man.
The thing is, like, we can't live, like, this sort of life. You can't just be like naked in the back of a
like
bus
Robert
with like 18 chicks, because you gotta like, your mom's gonna follow you on Instagram, and there's, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's like a whole lifestyle. It's like weird,
man. It's really too bad, because I feel like James Brown would have had like some excellent tweets. He would have been the best tweeter of all time.
Probably
would have been.
But we don't hate it, you know. It's I think we
you
kind of just embrace
evil.
It. We have fun. We have fun with it, and it certainly doesn't define our music or our career and our work that we're trying to do. It's just it's all part of the plan. So we just have fun with it, goof off.
Yeah.
Dude, did you see this tweet? Oh my god! Like,
I think it's more important. If you don't like to do it, surround yourself with people that like to do it.
That's right.
You know, because it's like, luckily enough, there's things that we like to do and good things point. That we don't like to do, but there's more than one of us.
Right.
So it all works out.
I keep it
old school. I like to just go out and tell everybody I'm
in
a band.
Joey writes letters and uses payphones.
That's right.
Will you accept this charge?
Yeah, letter writing is a lost art form.
Sprays it with cologne.
Within 2 minutes, you know who I am and where I'm from.
Yeah, exactly.
So you guys toured your way here?
Where'd you go?
Just
Fresno, and then we did two shows in Arizona. We played a festival in Arizona called Viva Phoenix, and then another show in Peoria, which is like outside Phoenix.
Okay.
And then we just did the 19-hour drive or whatever from Arizona to Austin.
Yesterday.
We had a couple of days off.
Yeah, so you touring your way back?
Yeah.
Okay.
A couple Texas shows.
Are you doing Lubbock?
We're doing Lubbock.
Lubbock?
It's like saying Lubbock.
Buddy
Hollyville.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, there's a group of people that came out in the 70s, like these weird kind of like mystical cowboy Renaissance
kind?
People.
The Burrito Brothers?
No, there's guys. I mean, they're well known in certain things. Like, they play on Letterman. They're called the Flatlanders, was their band then. But
yeah,
there's like four dudes.
Oh, really?
And they're
Jimmy,
like, right, plays Jimmy Dale Gilmore, Joey Lee, Butch Hancock, and they're all
look
like
them up. I don't know.
Playwrights and artists, and like they're you know
from Lubbock.
Yeah,
all from Lubbock. Yeah.
I actually got a.
It's a real cool, like, sort of weird scene going on there in the late 60s and early 70s.
Yeah, I really like that scene. I have an uncle that usually makes really good music recommendations, and he's recommended everything from Black Sabbath to Frank Zappa to Butthole Surfers and all kinds of weird stuff.
Your uncle's very cool.
He's one of my heroes. Donnie. He's 42,
yeah.
43.
What up, dog?
But he always makes good recommendations. He actually gave me the flat. He introduced me to the Flatlanders.
Yeah, there you go.
Pretty cool. I really got into it for a while.
All right, so man, is there anything people can get your music at the softwhite60s.com and on iTunes and the places
Spotify,
where music is available? Yeah. But you can just go to the softwhite60s, it's a great site. You can get around,
yeah.
You got a good
yeah.
SoundCloud.
It's a good place to start.
I think it's going to be in some record stores too, so if it's not in yours, you can ask for it.
Yeah.
And we're going to have our online
Targets.
Store set up soon with like vinyl and all that shit. Yeah, Target, Best Buy.
Target, Walmart.
Really?
No.
Yeah,
no.
Those
but,
are
yeah,
we'll expensive.
Have the online yeah. It'll be out there.
I recommend that anybody listening to this go out and see him. I have a lot of people in Houston and California and stuff, and you guys will be touring around. So
yeah, we'll be
check
definitely.
It out. Anything else I'm missing before set you free on the world?
No,
covered all the main awesome. Bases.
Yeah.
It was nice to meet you.
Listen to the album, check it out.
Glad to know we're both looking for girls. Thank you, guys.
Cheers. Thank you, man.
Born with a fever.
Soft White 60s from their album Get Right. That was great getting to talk to them. They are very cool guys, and I hope you appreciated the moment of chick oogling that I shared with Octavio, their singer. Next up, I have The Cold and Lovely from Los Angeles, California. You can find their music at thecoldandlovely.com. Megan Toohey and Nicole Fiorentino came by the hotel that I was doing these interviews at, and we sat down and talked. They have an incredible EP called Ellis Bell that came out last September, and they're here at South by Southwest doing some promotion for their album, doing a lot of shows. I got serenaded by them acoustically on a hill. I have a picture of that. I will post it on the Facebook page, and you guys will like it. So, hey, enjoy my conversation with Megan Toohey and Nicole Fiorentino from the band The Cold and Lovely. Let's get down. Yeah, that's how it'll start. I loved it. It reminds me of things, and it's weird because I got a little, how'd you say, get your feathers ruffled a little bit when I heard one song that had a great beat that's and you obviously almost exactly like one from a My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
I did a song like that. Yeah, I did a song like that, and I sent it to. This chick, she was on, it was years ago. This isn't about me, but it'll make you laugh. I sent a thing to this publisher that was looking for songs for Jordan Sparks.
Uh-huh.
She was an American Idol. So I sent this song out.
I voted for her.
And he wrote back to me in an email, like, hey, this song's okay, but like, when I need the next Jesus Jones single, that's what he wrote. I'll call you. And I was like, dude. And then you did it, and I'm like, did anyone get mad at you or give you any Jesus Jones shit?
So far, so good. No, we actually wrote that song based around the group of My Bloody Valentine.
Soon.
Because we just loved it so much. And Nicole, one day, I had this song that had been recorded, or it hadn't been recorded, but it had been kicking around for...
I think you had an acoustic demo of it or something.
Yeah, like 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
And I revisited it, and I thought, this would work as a Cold and Lovely song. We should kind of like, you know, fit it in somewhere. And she said, you should make it sound like the My Bloody Valentine song, like something about that groove. So what I picked up in that groove was the toms going do 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 do.
Okay.
And so that kind of became like this loop that I built in.
And then that became
then that, and then Nicole
and I built the bass part around that drum beat.
And we just took the original song and just produced it in that way. That's kind of how that came about.
We love that record and are very, very inspired by that record.
I listen to that record like twice a day. So
I have, it was hard for me to start listening to the new one in that way. Mm-hmm. I have to go and go like, hey, you got to listen to this new one.
Yeah.
Just because I think it's just because the other one became part of my life so much.
Yeah. Slowly but surely, the new one is growing on me. I mean, I loved it from the beginning, but it didn't have the same impact.
Yeah.
You know, as the first one. So.
You know what I like about you is that you you've been able to pick up some things from that style of music, but still present those songs are never presented songy. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
here's a song. Yeah. Can't hear the vocals. You got to really listen to it 18 times to figure out what the melody is. You know what I mean?
Sure,
yours, the vocals are up there, and it's like you took that, but you had an idea that you wanted people to hear.
Yeah. That's exactly why we wanted to start this band. Like, we love that sound, but, you know, I come from a very singer-songwriter background.
Yeah, me too.
And a lot of the people that I play with, you know, it's so song-driven, and a lot of that music that we love listening to, it's a landscape, and it's a feeling.
Right.
Whereas, like, we wanted to have songs that had that
actual
same
songs.
Kind of, like, you know, washy atmospheric production.
I tried to do that too once.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It is. It's tricky.
Yeah. So, there's another thing I noticed about your
your recordings, especially this album, The Ellis Bell. I listened to a couple of snippets of the other thing, but I got a few songs from Ellis Bell today, and I was listening to them when I was running, and there was something that also reminded me a bit of Garbage in a way.
Yeah, where we get that attitude, a lot. Yeah,
you're hitting all in the right spots.
Yeah, yeah, good. Well, yeah. You can kind of tell you're a producer, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because there's no wasted time in your songs. Thank like God, a garbage
that's
song.
That's a huge compliment.
You know what I mean? Like, there's no... That's... I think I might have even written that down. I mean, it's like... There's no... Here we go. No solos or wasted space. Like, every part serves a purpose to the song.
Well, that's how you kind of write and how we've always thought of our songs. Like, don't bother putting in a bridge if you're just having a bridge there just to have one. Like, right. Make it mean something, you know?
So is it you two that came up with the band and explain that? How did the band... How did this come about?
Yeah, well, it came about, basically, I met Nicole in L.A. probably about 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
And when I first met her, she was playing with like Veruca Salt and Spinnerette at the time. And we just kept, like, crossing paths at these auditions, you know, the typical L.A. audition or whatever. And then later on down the road, she got the Smashing Pumpkins gig. And around that time, I started, I was working as a side guy, like work for hire, guitarist and producer, and she was like, you should be doing your own stuff, your own material is really good, like you should be doing your own
thing. It's just a waste of talent, you know, and it frustrated me because she had all these amazing ideas and demos that were just sitting on her computer, and I would listen to them and be like, are you kidding me, like why aren't you releasing these, we gotta do something with this.
Well, I was kind of like, I had my own band in the 90s that did really well. We had like the classic like get signed, kind of stuff. The So-and-Sos.
The Weepies?
That was a band that I played with, but originally back in Boston.
The So-and-Sos.
Yeah, a band called the So-and-Sos. And we went through the whole label thing, you know, almost there kind of thing.
Yeah.
I just got really frustrated, so I decided to just say, you know, screw it, I'm going to stop being at the front and like doing the grind and just get paid to play. Like, I just want to get paid to play. I don't want to be my, you know, own entity at this point in my career. So
it's hard.
Yeah,
I think
really
a lot of us
hard.
Get to that point.
Yeah, just like, I've gotten to that point many times.
Yeah.
So I did that for like 6 years, basically. I just played guitar for other people. And then, like I said, Nicole got the Pumpkins gig, and she ended up going to Sedona, Arizona.
We went there to write the record that I was on with them, Oceania.
Uh-huh.
We went to Sedona, Arizona to write, so Meg came along with me.
Yeah. So you guys write, that band writes together?
Yeah. Well, that's tricky.
You don't have to talk about
that
it.
That was tricky.
Yeah, I don't, yeah.
We tried.
I'm sure it's tricky.
We tried. We definitely tried.
It didn't quite work out for them, but for me, it was like a cathartic experience. I was in this cabin, you know, in the middle of nowhere all day and all night while she was off working with the Pumpkins, and I just like locked myself in with no internet, no television, no anything, and I had brought a keyboard, bass, and guitar and the laptop, and I literally put together the whole first album during that like month that we lived there. And she would come back at night with her,
she'd
and,
have like three
Mike,
or four
the drummer,
songs done.
They'd listen and they'd be like, oh, I love this, I'm not so sure about this, what if you tried that kind of thing. And so it just kind of evolved out of that experience together. And then we got back in L.A. and we played it for a few people, and people were, like, freaking out about it. And we couldn't believe it, you know? So that kind of led to wanting to go even further into the sound that we were trying to develop on the first record, that we never quite got there.
Right.
So when the experience came up to do a new EP, we definitely, like, had a really clear vision of what we wanted it to be like. And at that time, we were playing with Patty Schummel on drums.
Oh, yeah.
And she also, just like the power behind her playing, led to like a really like a grittier sound and a darker sound than the first record. And then we released this one, and Dave Cooley ended up mixing it. He mixed the Silver Sun pickups and M83, and it just added like a whole new level of like just the sonic landscape that we were trying to shoot for in the first record and kind of missed. And now like the response is incredible. Like, it's just gone up and up. So.
Yes, I will say that what I heard of the snippets of the old album, this sounds far more realized. Like, it's another thing's really good, but you're like, oh, okay, I see what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, we feel that way about it.
Yeah, it was definitely that progression of like, okay, now this is actually what we imagined in the first place, but just weren't able to manifest it for whatever reason, you know.
And this came out just in September, so have you guys been playing in support of it? And
yeah, we've actually been able to now. And, you know, we've been a band now for, what, over 2 years?
Yeah.
Over 2 years. And we are now actually having the opportunity to get out and support what we've recorded thus far.
How's that feel? Pretty good?
It feels amazing.
Yeah?
We're able to bring it to life now, you know. And, you know, I've been on tour with the Pumpkins for the last 3.5 years, so I've been really busy. And now that I'm not doing that at the moment, we've just been able to focus on this 150%.
That's the best
feeling.
And it feels
really, really good.
Yeah.
No, and like I said, the response is amazing.
Yeah.
People are coming to us. Like, people every from every avenue of the industry are coming to us and being like, this is good, I want to be in on this.
That's so good.
I mean, how rare is that?
That's how Miss Maggie found us.
For 15 years. You know, easy 15 years as a touring musician, yeah. And I've never experienced the kind of reaction to any project I've been involved in that I'm experiencing to my own work, and that is like an incredible feeling.
Yeah.
So we're just gonna keep on dancing.
Feels like you did something right, not like when you're doing other stuff. You think you're doing good, and then all of a sudden you put it out. You're like, what did I do wrong?
Mm-hmm.
What? I was trying so hard. You guys all thought it was good before. What happened?
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, we're definitely feeling very encouraged now.
And so there's two other members that are here with you on this.
Yeah.
Show?
Yes. Drummer Aaron Tidwell,
okay,
has been playing with us for about 6 months now.
Okay.
She's from Denver and was a transplant,
yeah,
to LA, and we scooped her up before Beyonce could, basically.
She's also like a real powerhouse drummer, like hits super hard, you
yeah.
know, is one of those people that you're like, I can't believe this tiny little frame is capable of producing the sound, you know. She's just like,
well, it seems like live it would have a little bit more. Not that there isn't power, but you'd have to make up for some of the production
yeah.
with power, unless
yeah.
you were playing the tapes, which I assume
the tracks,
you do.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We do.
So not much, but
it wouldn't. I mean, that wouldn't be silly because it is that kind of music that you would
necessary.
Do that to.
Yeah, yeah, it's absolutely necessary.
But also energetically, you know, we play so differently live than we would.
Yeah.
Recording.
Yeah, that's
so,
what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it seems
so
like it might have
out.
A little more bombast live
yeah.
than it
yeah,
does.
Absolutely.
In the
band. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
And then Jen Goodrich is our keyboard player, and we met her through
Dave Cooley,
who mixed and mastered the record.
Yeah.
She was a friend of his. Yeah. So now we're all just out here, ready to do some showcases.
Hoping for the best.
Yeah.
Like everybody else.
How many shows are you doing?
Five.
Yeah, we have
two
showcases.
Okay.
And 3 parties.
Okay. How do you handle the tracks in a throw and go situation?
We'll
talk to me
tracks.
About that. That's, well, yeah.
That's.
I mean, would you just
like
need
a
direct box or something? But you gotta hear them. The drummer's gotta
yeah,
hear what's
we,
going on.
Yeah, we use Ableton and we split, you know, the tracks and the click through a direct box. And
okay. And you handle that yourself? Because what are you gonna give it to some guy that doesn't know what he's doing?
Yeah.
Did you bring a sound person with you?
We did actually.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. But
you'd need
Aaron,
one. I mean,
yeah.
if I was you, I would yeah. definitely get one.
Yeah.
More than like a 3-piece rock band or something.
Totally
true.
Aaron absolutely. Handles the tracks in the back.
She triggers everything.
Okay.
But we have an understanding that if something goes awry with the track, she just turns it off, and we
okay,
just play.
Okay, but you got to.
yeah. Just
and honestly, we've played a few. We've got a few shows under our belt now where the tracks didn't work at all.
Okay,
like,
good.
You know, the lights go up, and then you know, you're pressing the
right,
go
it's
button,
like, okay,
and
just
it's
go.
Not working.
Yeah.
So it's not like we'd be a total disaster
okay,
if the
good.
Tracks fail us. So
good.
that's promising.
Yeah.
And we do have Jen on keys, and she kind of fills out. And I do a lot of like really washy.
Guitar
stuff and loop myself, and so yeah, so there's all that stuff going on too. So it's not
she's
it's
kind
not
of
super
a, she's a tone
do you feel like that hinders your ability to perform
sometimes,
or it
yeah.
helps you be you shoegazer because you're down there gazing at the shoes because you gotta loop stuff?
Honestly, sometimes it's tricky because I, you know, I'm doing a tap dance on my pedal board.
Yeah.
Basically
yeah,
I watch
yeah.
we watch videos sometimes of ourselves.
Yeah.
Because we're vain.
Yeah.
No, because we want to improve and you know,
right.
no,
yeah.
see what we can improve upon. And it's just hilarious to watch her because she's got, like, she really does kind
yeah.
of a tap dance. She's got so much going on
yeah.
on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading about St. Vincent. I'm a huge St. Vincent
yeah,
fan.
Yeah.
And she actually, her keyboard player controls her pedals, like switches her pedals for her. And I think that's absolutely genius. Like, if you can get to a level where you have somebody, like, switching
that's
your
good
pedals
to know.
For you.
Yeah.
But her performance is so important. Like
of
she's
course.
Like a true artist, and every element of her and her image is so important to that show.
Yeah.
That you know, it makes sense. Of course.
Try to
yeah.
take away the distractions.
Yeah.
She is a forward-thinking artist.
Yeah.
That's like, yeah. I get excited when she puts out a record.
Me too.
Like I do. I just get excited. I'm going to hear something I've never heard before.
That's all you've been listening to in the car lately.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm so bummed she's playing at the same time as us tomorrow or Thursday. One of the nights. She's playing at the same time, so we can't. Mm. We're going to miss her. But
we've seen her a bunch of times. I actually went to, she was around in Boston when I lived there. And I remember, I have a very clear memory of meeting her. She was coming to see my band in Boston play. And I was playing at TT the Bears. It's this kind of like dive bar club in Boston. And I was walking down the street past the Middle East, and it was like a snowy, beautiful night. Yeah, that's a great club. And I was walking, you know, toward the club, and I heard these heels like clip pop behind me, and I was like, heels in a snowstorm, like who is wearing heels? And I was totally intrigued, and you know, they followed me around the corner, and then they kept following me like right to the club, and I turned around and I saw her, and she was like the most beautiful woman I have ever seen.
She looks like a porcelain doll.
It was like this like the gates open, and I turned around, and she's like, are you Meg? I'm Annie, you know. And then we became good friends, and she actually used to open up for my band at these tiny clubs, and everybody kind of didn't know what to make of her. She was just such a...
You could see, you know what, I know somebody from that time that I said something about like, a friend of mine, Susanna Schaffel, turned me on to St. Vincent, like the first record, and I was like, oh my God, have you heard this St. Vincent? And he's like, saw that chick.
Yeah.
She's fucking terrible and weird. And no. It was just like, you could see, if you walk in, you're expecting, you know, something.
Right.
When something's so different, the first thing, your reaction is to not like it.
Right.
I don't know what
it's
this is.
A little
is.
Too arty.
Yeah. No, she's great.
I mean, and then years later, like, a friend came over and said, have you heard Annie's got a record out? You know? And I said, no, I know she played with Polyphon Experience, but I got the record. I listened to it on a bus. And I put my headphones on, and literally, like, I just could not even believe what was happening.
Is the first one the one that make the black hole blacker?
Yes.
Yeah,
that shit, man. That's a great. That's the same album that Susanna gave me, and I was it gave me goosebumps too.
Yeah. But anyway,
have a moment of silence and just talk about
this
other artist.
Thank you, Annie. We're the cold and lovely.
I have more questions about the tracks, simply because I'm in a 7-person band, and there's constant, like, hey, guys, let's just get tracks.
Yeah.
And one of them is, I feel like I might be one of the first of the 7 to get canned if the tracks come in.
Don't get the track.
The other thing is that I like to keep stuff as real as possible, but I also live in fear of like, when you get on this shit, like, eventually, like, do you guys practice?
On.
When you practice, do you practice with the tracks and then practice just in case, like you said, hey, we've had this, you know, without it?
We have at times. Yeah. Not enough, but we're working on that. We're working toward that.
The other thing
is, we would like to use less and less.
Yeah.
Right.
Ultimately.
Right, but I mean, ultimately,
but
what you're doing
cool
is like
layer,
there's a dance thing, and there's an element where things need to stay at a certain tempo, and and there should be some...
I don't think I know any band right now that doesn't play to some sort of track or have some sort of looping going on.
I know.
So I used
nothing
to
be ashamed
to be, like,
it's nothing to be ashamed of.
I used to be annoyed by it. Then I realized how much it actually adds to my show. So now I'm just like, I think it's... As long as you're not abusing it.
Yeah,
I think
we just don't want to go too far.
I think when you do cheap shit like just backing vocals and extra percussion, that's lame.
But
otherwise,
if it's part of the song.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Like, use it if it's like... like in this band, it's a cover band. We do Heart of Glass. But our drummer sampled... one measure of the loop, and we play to that, and that's going through the whole song. But that's a different thing.
Yeah.
And he's the only guy that has to follow it. We just have to follow him.
If it serves a purpose and you're not going overboard with it, then we feel okay about it.
Yeah. So are you touring? Did you fly out here? Did you tour your way down here?
We flew out here. We were going to tour our way out here, but it just didn't make sense financially at this point. We're going to be doing a pledge campaign when we get back to L.A.
Okay.
To try and get some money for tour support, because obviously it's so expensive.
So expensive.
We're working on possibly also planning some stuff overseas. Like, we're trying to work on some connections that we have in South America.
Oh, great.
And we'd also love to go, Mexico. We've already got some things cooking down there. And then also Europe. We're just shooting to try and pitch our band as an opener for some bands that we think might help us out.
Yeah.
And hoping for some stuff this summer.
Unfortunately, you've all been in the thing long enough where you might be able to reach people if you need to.
We definitely have some connections on
the
side.
What else are you guys, what else are you two doing outside? Are you still playing with the Pumpkins? And
We're on a hiatus right now, so like I said,
Let me ask you a question just logistically. Yeah. Are you in that band?
That's a good question.
Like at this point, like obviously there were four people originally, right. And I've been in bands where you have those kind of things, and then you fire a guy, and you're like, well, this next guy's not going to be, like, this guy, we're just going to pay him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's a gray area, because it was kind of like...
Well, it's not your band. You didn't build it.
Right. It's not my band. I didn't build it. It's not like this, where it's my baby, you know? Yeah. With Meg. Yeah. But it was definitely more than a hired gun kind of situation. It was kind of like the other level of hired gun, but not quite
a second level.
Member. Yeah.
Not, yeah.
Yeah.
What about you? What are you up to, man? Outside of this, what do you do?
I'm still kind of working on, occasionally I'll get hired to play guitar on some records and tracks. And I mean, I'd love to be doing more producing. That's kind of my favorite thing to do, is produce other people. But right now I'm really focused on this band, and anything that comes up is purely for financial reasons.
Sure.
Everything else
I've got
almost 30 songs ready for the next set of whatever we choose to release.
That's great.
So we're hoping to put out another EP in the next, like, I would say 6 months for sure.
Good. Now, where did you record this EP? Did you do it in a studio? You said a guy mixed it, or you guys did it?
Home studio.
Home studio?
Yeah.
Wow.
Primarily.
I engineered everything. And
yeah.
I played a lot of stuff on it. We just did it all in our living room, and then we recorded drums separately. And then we shipped the tracks off to Dave, who mixed it.
Unbelievable.
And that's pretty much what happened.
The focus after South By will be getting all the demos together and maybe making them.
And what's your focus now when you're here?
Our focus
like, what's
here.
Your focus? What do you want to take away from here? Meet some people, make some friends, relationships?
We
want
to blow some minds. That's what we I mean, the more people that hear us, the more I think we're going to have a chance at going somewhere. So this is it's a toss-up, because this is such like a clusterfuck of people. So you never know if you're going to get like looked over or lumped in or whatever. But we felt the need to do it because we have never done it before.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all done it separately with other artists, but this is like our chance to like, it's like our coming out. It's our coming out party, basically, as a band that like means business and like, you know.
We want people to leave the shows going, who the fuck is that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think you can do promotion, you can, you know, do interviews, do the whole thing, but if you don't have the songs, then you're not a good live band.
You guys definitely have the
then,
songs.
Yeah. Thank
really.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think so. I mean, not in a cocky way, but we feel like we belong somewhere.
I mean, you came all the way here to do a conference to get people. It's okay to think that you're worth it.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
It's okay. It's always that weird thing. You don't know exactly how much you can congratulate yourself.
Right. Yeah. Pat on the back.
Because some of it might be ugly.
Good work, kids. We're having a Bloody Mary congratulating ourselves.
Yeah.
That's the way to go.
This is how we're treating ourselves.
Do you guys have a show tonight?
We do, yeah.
It's you.
B.D. Riley's Pub at 1 a.m.
Okay, but this isn't coming out for a while, so.
Yeah. We're playing B.D. Riley's.
Tonight. Whatever night this is. Whatever night you're listening to this, even if you're listening to this podcast in 2017, go to B.D. Riley's tonight, 8 p.m.
1 a.m.
1 a.m. Well, go there, get there early, because it's going to be crowded. The Cold and Lovely is popular.
Yeah. We're going to...
Working on it.
We're going to take the Irish pub down.
Taking it over.
Are you guys Irish?
I am, yeah.
We both are.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You both are? Hey, let me ask you about Boston. You grew up there?
Yeah.
You're part of that scene?
Oh, yeah, big time.
Do you know Stacey Jones?
Oh, yeah. Totally.
You know Bill Leffler?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was in a band with Bill Leffler.
Awesome.
He was in that band that we were on Lars's label together.
Cool, yeah. Those guys are legendary in Boston.
Really?
For sure, yeah.
Bill's the most naked musician I was in the band.
Did Stacey play with Veruca Salt?
No. Oh, maybe.
I think so, for a hot second.
Yeah.
He was in some band. There was some band that he was in that was significant. It was one of those bands from back then.
The 90s Boston.
It was the 90s, like... It was
Letters to Cleo.
He was the drummer from Letters to Cleo. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and now Michael and Kay both live in Los Angeles.
Is that from Letters to Cleo? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Stacy and Bill started a production company called Death Star Productions. Bill started the studio.
I've heard that name for sure.
Yeah, I don't know how they haven't gotten sued by Lucasfilms, but they probably will at some point.
Yeah, just wait another few minutes.
Is there anything that I'm missing? People can find your music and find everything out about you at thecoldandlovely.com.
Yes. Yeah, Facebook's on there, SoundCloud, your Facebook, Twitter, the whole
good
thing.
Good SoundCloud.
Oh, yeah. The thing that we love to talk about is we're all volunteers at Rock and Roll Camp for Girls Los Angeles.
That is fucking awesome.
Yeah, it is fucking awesome. We love it, and any chance we can get to give a shout-out to that organization. It's a worldwide organization.
It is.
But we run our camp out of Los Angeles. And
it's the same one that's here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, we're playing the girls.
We're playing their party.
Boston party.
The Austin
good.
Party. So, yeah.
Good. Have you guys heard Ume?
You know, it sounds familiar.
I think you'd like them.
Yeah, it sounds really familiar.
Yeah, I was thinking she's an amazing guitar player, this girl, Lauren Larson. It's a trio. Real dreamy, very heavy. Here, from here. But they're doing really well. I asked her about, like, how many, does she get emails from young girls and, like, you know, and she does. And you know, it's nice to know, because I don't know what happened in our generation. In my generation, it was so rare to have female musicians. Where it wasn't like she plays good for a girl. You know, like, this kind of shit that's just bullshit. But like,
it's
you know,
very much like that, unfortunately. Like, that's the reason why the camp exists.
It's just, I mean, I'm in bands with girls. I mean, I've worked with Kathy. I'm in the band I'm in with All the People has a lady in it. She can sing and play circles around me a lot of times.
Yeah, well, people like Kathy,
and I don't think
like
I think of them as just people.
You know?
It is always it fascinates me that in 2014 people are still surprised that we can play.
Yeah.
That just drives me nuts.
Yeah, it drives us nuts too.
Lauren was telling me this thing about her thing with Ume walking into a club one time and a guy thinking that it was the singer's girlfriend carrying his his guitar. And she's like, fuck you, the bass player is my husband.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Get out of here.
No, it's the most, I think, the most inspiring thing for me is when a young girl tells me that I inspired her to play bass.
Yeah, you and know? To just play bass.
Because I had female role models, and I like
who
my
is?
Dream.
Kathy. Is Kathy one of yours? Kathy's one of my role models.
Yeah, totally.
And Jane. Both of those guys. Oh, two of my biggest.
Gordon,
yeah.
Kim Deal.
Yeah.
You know, sure. L7, Babes in Toyland, all those bands in the 90s, Bikini Kill, were my female role models and why I started playing music.
Juliana Hatfield always a huge inspiration.
Oh my gosh,
if we can be that.
Oh yeah, she's a Boston jammer.
I used to go see her at small clubs in Boston all the time.
Yeah.
But that's the reason why we do it, because if we can be what we had for other young girls, then we're doing
something
right.
Yeah, there was like a period of time where women artists that weren't just like Britney Spears or whatever disappeared entirely. Like, there were no all-girl bands.
Yeah, and you know, I get mad about, like, this fucking thing with Taylor Swift. Like, I co-wrote half the album. It's like, whoa, you did? It's like,
for you.
She should have written the whole fucking album.
Yeah.
Like, someone gives her millions of dollars. She should be doing something.
Yeah, exactly.
Do something.
Give me a fucking break.
Yeah. Not that impressed.
No.
It's true, but, like, I've definitely seen in the last, like, 2 years, especially, all of a sudden, it's, like, turning the corner. And I hope it's not just the fact that, like, now female bands seem to be, like, the it.
Right, girls. Right.
It's not a passing
trend. From now, there won't be any rock camp anymore because it won't be a fad. Yeah. Right?
I
no,
just read
I think
an email from a friend that said that she was coming out here and that they ended up canceling her bill because there were too many female artists on the bill.
Are you kidding me?
Is that
like,
real?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that a real
it's
thing?
100% true. 100% true. And I think she's actually a comedian, so there were too many female comedians on.
Oh,
the bill.
I know. It's horrible in that world. I'm friends with a lot of comics, and it's not a good place.
I mean, how is that okay in 2014, we already have another woman on the bill, so we don't want to. But you know,
that's
the,
exactly
the
what that's
like.
That's
like female artists do that to one another, too.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't want another girl in the band, or I don't want
exactly.
another. Exactly. So there's like, there's
that.
Something there that's bigger that needs to change on both ends, male and female, you know? Like, so that's what the camp does, and that's what we're working toward to bring awareness to, and to like help kids break down those, you know,
we're just
stereotype
people.
Roles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the competitive nature of teenage girls, like trying to break through that wall. Like, there's plenty of room for everybody, you know?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah, there is. It's a huge world.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And everyone can have their own Facebook page and Reverb Nation or SoundCloud or whatever the fuck you need.
Anybody.
They want.
Anybody. Really, truly, anyone.
Literally.
I love your songs and I love what you guys are doing.
Thank you
a
so
lot.
Much.
And I'm really glad that I got to sit down and talk to you.
Thanks for talking.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm glad when Maggie first said that, I was like, oh, I know Nicole from somewhere.
Yeah.
And then it took me a little while.
Yeah, it was crazy night.
For me, it was crazy after I saw you guys.
Was it?
Very crazy.
It happens.
Very crazy.
Well, yeah. And it was a crazy night for Kathy, too.
Oh, yeah. That's
I didn't,
right.
Okay. That scared me to be, like... I thought that was so weird.
It
made me sad.
Yeah, super sad.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about.
But I did make out with a blonde chick
there
and then a red-haired chick later. Not to sound sexist and throw the word chick
What's
around.
What's wrong with
brunette? Right now.
There's nothing wrong with it. No, I would have made out with any brunette. I would have made out basically with everyone that night.
Spectrum.
I would have tried to make out with Kathy at some point. Which I get scared of because she kicked my ass.
She probably would.
Is there anything that I'm missing? People can find your music at The Cold and Lovely. They can find you on iTunes.
Yep.
Anything that I'm missing?
You got videos.
They got
videos? Yeah, we got a bunch of new videos coming out, too. Yeah.
Okay.
We did this sessions at
Studio
at Matt Wallace's studio called Studio Deluxe in LA, where they film and they record you at the same time. So it's a live performance recorded.
I love that.
Mixed by Will Kennedy, who's a great engineer who I went to Berkeley with, actually. And we did 6 songs with them. 2 have already been released on YouTube. Actually, we released one of them yesterday.
Oh, really?
Before South By. And then, you know, we have a couple left.
So how can
so people can look up The Cold and Lovely.
Yeah, live Studio, at Studio Deluxe. Deluxe.
Live at Studio Deluxe.
We released 2
that's a good way
so
to do
far.
It.
We have 4 more to go.
Yeah.
So.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you guys for joining me. I hope you have a great conference. I hope
thank
all
you.
Of your dreams come true. I hope I get to see you guys again.
Yeah, me too.
Like,
you know
I'd really
dreams do come true. That's a real thing.
Yeah, they
I just
do.
Want to put that out there.
They do. They already have. I mean, the fact that we've both been working musicians for 15 years, like that's already our dreams have come true. This would just be like the ultimate dream, you know? Like, we get to live a life that, like, people can only, you know, wish that they lived. So I think we're doing all right either way.
What time is it? I'm going to tell you right now exactly what our lives are like. It's 3:08 on a Tuesday, and we are watered down.
Almost done with our
yeah, in a badass hotel, hanging out with cool
hotel.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah, looks pretty
and
good.
About to play some music.
Yeah, there's some poor guy in a
there's
cubicle that nobody likes.
Too. See, we know these guys.
Hey, guys.
Hey,
those guys. Well, anyway, thank you so much for coming on, and I will... I'll keep up with you, hopefully.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Good
thank
luck.
You.
Bye. Yeah. Megan and Nicole from The Cold and Lovely and their EP, Ellis Bell. I suggest you get it. It's really good. I'd like to thank the Soft White 60s and The Cold and Lovely for coming on the show that day. You can find out about both of those bands at thesoftwhite60s.com and thecoldandlovely.com. I would also like to thank the dudes in the Soft White 60s for the vinyl. Love and vinyl. Anyway, that was my Tuesday of South by Southwest, or at least part of it. So I hope you enjoyed it. And thank you so much for listening. Do not forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Like our Facebook page, and if you want to find out what's going on with me at all times in photos or in 140 characters or less, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. And here's some more Cold and Lovely from the South by Southwest 2013 extravaganza. Let's get down.
And purple waste. Say your prayer for us and one for them. We left, except we left to